Welcome back to Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, former number one Game of Thrones podcast in the realm, now bringing you the best TV shows and movies weekly in an easily digestible podcast packed with laughs. I am your host, Ross Bolin, here as always with my dear friend, Mr. Barrett Dudley Barrett. How are you on this fine Thursday afternoon? We're recording later in the week this week.
Yes.
We did a little schedule.
And as such, I've just completely forgotten all of the references that I was going to make.
Damn it.
That's okay, though, because, you know, we've got a lot to talk about today. So I have very little time for hijinks today.
It's true.
So I'm not going to sit here and I'm not going to make any jokes. Let's just go ahead, move on, get started with this podcast, because at the end of the day, there's two things that matter in life. One of them is podcasting, and one of them is... it's going back, riding with your family on your ranch, and just enjoying the beautiful big sky with all those beautiful stars up there, and just enjoying what life has to offer, and just protecting that family at all costs. Do you know what I mean, Ross?
Barrett, I'm with you.
Good. I'm sure glad. I'm sure glad that you're with me,
Barrett. I wear my brand on the inside. On the inside. Today's episode will cover the latest from Lovecraft Country. I believe it's episode 5 of season 1. We're going to cover the penultimate and final episode of Yellowstone season 1, which is what I think Barrett and I are both most looking forward to discussing today. And then The Boys season 2 episodes 2 and 3. But of course, first, we're opening with general entertainment talk in the form of tidbits and such with Barrett, so prepare your mind for that. Today's episode of OCC is brought to you by Lisa, makers of the most comfortable mattresses in the world. I routinely argue that your mattress is as important as your living room television in terms of purchases that you make for your home. You gotta ask yourself, is your mattress kind of shitty? Do you even remember where it came from, when you bought it? Do you wake up every morning feeling like you've won the lottery because your mattress is so comfortable? I do. On my Lisa Legend. I slept on the Lisa Hybrid for years and years, and as I said a million times on this show, most comfortable bed I've ever laid eyes or body on. Every product Lisa makes is phenomenal. I upgraded to the Lisa Legend. Even better, so comfy, love it. The Hybrid is now in my guest room. I sleep on a Lisa pillow. I've got a Lisa blanket on my couch. Lisa is incredible. Lisa. They know how important rest is to a better life. Lisa is the foundation of a healthier, happier you, and to Lisa, a bed is more than just a place to sleep. It's a place for relaxation and rest. All of their products have been thoughtfully designed to go beyond creating a comfortable bed to transform your bedroom into a sanctuary you actually want to spend time in. Like I said, I love all their stuff. They donate one mattress for every 10 they sell through organizations that work in causes like foster care prevention. To date, they've donated more than 33,000 mattresses through more than 1,000 nonprofits. Lisa mattresses are made in the USA. In-home delivery and setup is available. Financing is also available. Clam fam, do not miss out. Live healthier, live happier by resting deeper. Order today and get 15% off any mattress for a limited time at lisa.com/dragon.
Dragon.
Use the promo code DRAGON. That's LEESA.com/dragon, promo code dragon. The year has been rough. We're spending more time in our beds. Get yourself a Lisa so that that time is even more enjoyable and comfy. LEESA.com/dragon. And now it's time for tidbits and such with Barrett.
Thank you. Thank you for that introduction. First, and this is going to be related, but let me just say that we did record backwards this week, of course, because of this whole reverse entropy thing that we're dealing with. It's very weird. It's very, taking some getting used to, but it's
we got to find another one of those machines.
It's all good. Yeah, we got to get it back into the reverse microwave, which will then be a forward microwave. It's a whole thing. Don't worry. Just go see Tenet. Now,
and then join Movie Club on Patreon.com.
Yes, so on our Patreon episode, which is already released because we did it earlier this week / later this week, who's to really say? Look, we are living in unprecedented times.
Time is a flat circle.
And therefore, we did an unprecedented bit where, a segment, which was actually Such Bits and Tid with Ross. It was electrifying.
Again, reverse entropy.
Reverse entropy. It was very, very exciting. Truly unprecedented, groundbreaking stuff that we did there.
We talked a lot about
everything that we're looking forward to in Q4. Of 2020.
The rest of 2020.
The worst year in our lives.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of stuff to look forward to. And we talked about a bunch of it on this podcast. It was great fun. It was a really good episode. You guys should go check it out.
Patreon.com/OystersClamsCockles.
Tiers starting at $5 to access this week's episode.
All members of the Crustacean Nation and Mollusk Militia on Patreon have access to this most recent episode we're discussing currently, which is what's to come in 2020.
So one of the things that we are most excited about and that we talked about on this podcast a little bit is The Mandalorian.
Yes, sir. Season 2.
Now, a mere day after talking about Mandalorian, the trailer just dropped this week, there are now some unsubstantiated rumors floating around about some issues with the production of season 2. Notably, that it is reported that Pedro Pascal quit halfway through the season.
You're telling me after we've been making jokes for about a year and a half now about him not even needing to be there, not be in the suit at all, that halfway through the season he may have allegedly bounced?
Yes. Would you like to know why he maybe did this, maybe not? We're not really sure.
More than anything in the world.
Because he wants scenes without the damn helmet on, Ross.
Oh, wow, that's shocking. You're telling me that a near A-list celebrity would like some actual FaceTime on the show he stars in?
Yeah, it's a weird thing. Don't know, you know, I don't know. Like, you know, it's like he wants to build his brand or something, or be a recognizable actor on the show.
Or be credited with his own work.
You know, or have anything going for him here on this ultra-popular TV show.
Of course, this was an issue that you recognized before we even started watching. It was something you brought up before the show even aired. You were talking about, like, what is going to happen with Pedro Pascal being Pedro Pascal and having to wear this helmet the whole time? And as we worked through the first season, we sort of made peace with it. But looking at it now from you know, several months removed from season one and discussing season two and looking forward to it, there is just no way him and his agent were going to continue to be okay. Because think about the international branding that takes place with The Mandalorian. Think about how we discussed how many Baby Yoda dolls were going to be sold eventually when they started coming out. They dropped the ball on the merchandising stuff initially.
They did.
But
they
The Mandalorian is far and away the most marketable franchise that Disney Plus has dropped, which is obviously very popular with children. Star Wars, always been huge for kids. This universe, very, very franchisable.
Yes.
In terms of making stuff and selling stuff. And Pedro Pascal wants in on that. Because you're looking at a guy who's looking down the barrel of another 20, 30 years in Hollywood, right? So he can literally be like, it's because that's, if once you reach that level, man, like where you get to like the recognizability of guys like The Rock because of shit you've done that resonated internationally, it's over. You just print money for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's you're absolutely right about this being like an international phenomenon. This is a worldwide hit. Now, a lot of the kind of the rebuttals to these rumors that are coming out is, so you're telling me that Pedro Pascal didn't know what he was signing up for? He didn't realize that this character was never going to be able to take his helmet off? And that's a good question. Like, it seems like this show knew from the get-go that the whole thing was going to be this guy didn't ever take his helmet off.
But yeah, but you imagine, like, when they pitched it to him, they could have danced around it a little. We don't know.
And it's also possible that, like you're saying, we kind of saw this with the lack of like readiness as far as merch. Is it possible that Disney and Lucasfilm and like everybody behind this just didn't really quite understand how big of a hit this was
going
to be?
Or they just had a lot going on.
Maybe they didn't understand like just how popular Baby Yoda was going to be. So it is.
I don't know, man. It's fucking Star Wars.
I mean, right? Like, surely they kind of knew. They've got Jon Favreau behind it. He's like their ace.
But imagine,
right?
But you have to imagine this. It's probably a relatively new team of people that was established to put together Disney Plus and then approve and do all the shit with all the shows and movies that they were going to put out underneath that brand. I would imagine it's not the same person. They didn't just like double the size of the job of a Disney executive and were suddenly like, and now you have Disney Plus as well as the regular Disney stuff to worry about.
Yeah. Now, I mean, either way, it's still totally possible that he's like, okay, you know, that they're halfway through. He's continuing to read these scripts. There's still literally no FaceTime. The show has become this ultra popular hit that everybody is stoked about for the return, you know, and he's basically like, all right, maybe he just had, you know, now he's like, look, I want to get my face in here. This is absurd.
So
I'm Pedro Pascal, the show is a massive hit. Let me get, and apparently, like, based on the rumors, he wants some scenes, a few scenes with his helmet off. It's not like he wants
Yeah, but the problem is that the very thing that like the whole Mandalorian, you know, is built on. You don't take the helmet off. This is the way.
Right, but we could still, we talked about this last season about how like I wanted, like let's get a scene or two with no helmet.
I know, I'm just trying to
think of
what...
I don't care how you make it happen, just do it. Let me see my boy Pedro.
But isn't it once he takes it off, he can literally never put it back on, like that's it?
No, he takes it off to eat.
Oh yeah, but he can't be seen with it off.
He can't be seen with it off. So there's
ways to work in easily.
Yes, absolutely. And I don't know if this is something that they were just like saving for a middle season.
Well, what, did he not read the whole fucking season before he started shooting? And then halfway through he was like, God damn it!
That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
Yeah, what the hell?
These rumors
are, how unsubstantiated are we talking?
I mean, where there's smoke, there's fire, typically.
Yeah.
And there's more to this story. So Pedro Pascal, and I don't exactly know, like, so there's a creative team on The Mandalorian, and then there's Lucasfilm, which is obviously, like, part of Disney now. But, you know, so those two are kind of separate entities at this film. Lucasfilm is obviously, like, part of the production, but the creative team has the reins on Mandalorian.
Okay.
And so apparently, like, Pedro Pascal went over the creative team of Mandalorian straight to Lucasfilm to be like, yo, let me get some scenes with my helmet off, which then allowed Lucasfilm a way in to talk to the creative team, and Lucasfilm wants more standalone episodes. They want looser ties. They don't want it as serialized. They don't want long arcs. Yeah, so that like gave them the in to try to push their thumb down on the creative team to do more like episodes that just stand alone, that don't need to be tied into the larger story.
This is not a good look.
So it's not a good look. It's not a great sign for, because we liked the lightness of this show, mm-hmm. but at the same time, I still like the connective tissue.
Yes.
I still want there to be an overarching story.
It was pretty minimal.
And it was, right. So it's just
not as slow moving as you could make an overarching story.
Look, man, the crazy thing about this is that I don't think that there has been a single Star Wars entity since Disney has owned it that hasn't been just like...
A drama-filled
yes,
shit show?
Yes, a drama-filled shit show is a really great way to put it.
Is honestly what they have like, all felt like.
All the directors fired, so many reshoots on movies like Rogue One and Solo, like they just cannot get their shit together with the Star Wars property, and it's really, really strange to watch because it seems like it should be the easiest shit in the world.
I gotta say, walking off of this show halfway through season two would just, unless like they, when, hopefully we get more to the story, and hopefully this is, you know, at some point confirmed.
Other pieces of this are that Pedro doesn't like being in the suit. It's apparently very uncomfortable.
But like, bro, you're on one of the 10 best TV shows you could be on right now in terms of popularity, in terms of your career.
Is it?
I would still argue yes.
I don't think so at all.
I mean, no, it's not good for branding. No, it's not good for your face.
It does not matter that Pedro Pascal is in this show. We talked about this last year. It's probably why they're...
think even being a part of something this big... Because the level he's at, that's not what he needs anymore. It's not like he needs resume builders. He needs FaceTime.
Dude, like you and I are, you know, we love this shit. We talk about it all the time. Like,
yeah.
Pedro Pascal's voice is recognizable to us because
true,
we know the guy.
But not generally. That's fair.
To any, general fan of this show that's just like, oh, Star Wars, Disney Plus, like... They don't know that's the Viper under there.
Okay, that's true. Okay, fair enough. I'm seeing now the conversation between him and his agent where they're like, this is worthless.
Yeah.
We're wasting our fucking time
here.
They should have been in front of this on both sides.
It seems like it, definitely. And we've talked before about how a lot of the scenes are his stunt double as is. So at this point, I'm just like, they need to just rework this contract and just have Pedro be the voice.
Yeah, I'm changing my mind. This is not a top 10 show for you to be starring in.
And he does not need to be in the suit ever.
Which we discussed as an option.
Right.
Like, he really only needs to be the voiceover
just
guy.
Just do the voice. Like, this is a Star Wars hallmark, right? Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Different voice than body.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It was totally fine. Nobody cares.
But if he is tired, I'm sure that he's like, I'm Pedro Pascal. I'm on set wearing this goddamn suit that I hate wearing and is uncomfortable as shit for 14 hours a day.
What if he's
and
method?
I literally never get a scene
with it off
where my face is on screen. Like,
and
I'm sick
of this
shit.
What if he's a method actor, so he's sitting in his trailer with the helmet on? He's like, I can't fucking eat. I can't drink. Well, again, he's allowed to take it off in private.
So, yeah.
I keep forgetting that wrinkle.
Will be interesting to get more on this story, to hear what actually happened, and to see if Pedro Pascal is not there for season three. You
Good
know?
God. Disney, pull it together.
Yeah. So.
Maybe less, like, they did a great job hiring engineers to build out the app. Maybe less money on engineers now and more money on, like, I don't know, crisis management classes or something. Like, you guys are struggling. This isn't good. But even worse is that it's like leaking. That
yeah,
this is all
yeah.
that this stuff is getting out.
It's very much a leak at this point.
It's not what you want.
No.
As a company or as an actor, frankly,
yeah.
It's not good for anybody.
Okay, moving on to other big tentpole properties.
Tentpoles.
David Benioff and D.B. Weiss. This this news is a couple weeks old at this point, and we kind of skipped over it a little bit. They've officially announced what their first Netflix project is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it is adapting another unadaptable book series. This one is an award-winning Chinese book series called The Three-Body Problem, which you and I were familiar with due to our group text. We've got some voracious readers in there.
Yeah, real book nerds in this group
and
text.
And they
our
were
high school friends.
They were big on this series about how, like, kind of crazy and awesome and spectacular it was from, you know, just like a this kind of weird, like, sci-fi, like, cool, just like had all sorts of, you know, interesting stuff.
Now, you said Chinese?
Yes.
So was the version they read translated to English?
No, they're both fluent in Mandarin.
Our friends?
No, of course it's translated.
Well, remember, one of them was in China for a while.
Yeah,
I don't
no,
know.
He speaks a little
he
Mandarin.
Took some
but
Mandarin.
Yeah, no, they're reading the English translations.
Well, what I mean, I wonder, in the form of a novel, is that like a massive change in like subtext and shit?
Yeah, no, I mean, you got to imagine that adapting from like a non-Western
yeah.
language
yeah.
to English. That you lose a lot of stuff.
Now, I ask this because, Barrett, I don't know if you know this, but I once wrote a 2013 New York Times bestselling novella, and it was actually translated
into...
It
was a novella, I believe,
novella.
Wasn't it? It was called a novella.
Uh-huh, people, yeah. And it was translated into one other language.
Categorized in the romance.
Uh-huh.
It was in romance.
And it was in romance. Yep. It was translated into one other language, Italian.
Italian, yeah.
And what I'll tell you is the translating didn't go well.
The Italians are very bawdy, so it makes sense that they were all about this book.
They changed the title to American College, and they slapped a condom on the cover, and then I only read the back and the front.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I put them into Google Translator, and that was all I needed to know, man. Things are lost in translation,
yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. And then at that point, you're really relying on, you know, again, now it's weird, because you're... Somebody translated your book, and then you retranslated
novella.
The Italian. So you're playing telephone there. So it's so
yeah, it really
so
fucks
then
it up.
Then it's really that. So that's why you have to trust that the person that translated TFM
mm-hmm.
into Italian was like, you know, they knew both languages really well, so that they could get establish the context and
so you're saying it's likely with an incredibly well-selling book series like this that they had a good translator and things are probably minimally damaged, but
yes,
still
but
a translated version.
The author was Chinese. He wrote it in Chinese. You're definitely going to lose some stuff here.
Okay.
Now I have not read too much into this. It's just interesting because I know that people have talked about this book as one of these properties, like Game of Thrones and like Dune and like others, that are like, well, there's no way you could ever make this into a TV show or a movie.
Right. And that's just the structure of the storytelling and the pieces of it that make it a massive challenge. In terms of Game of Thrones, it was that the books were chaptered by character each chapter would switch POV from a character to a character to a like, you'd have an Arya chapter, you'd have a Tyrion chapter, you'd have a Cersei chapter, you'd have a Jaime chapter, you'd have a Bran chapter.
Yep.
And each part of that story would be told from that perspective.
And the length
and then the
and
dragons
the
and then all the shit and the length and the detail and the
world
for,
building.
For
like,
years and years and years, it was yeah. considered untouchable by Hollywood. And in the case of Game of Thrones, that was intentional because right. George R. R. Martin felt snubbed by Hollywood and some of the things he had tried to do earlier in his career and was like, fuck these people. I'm going to write an epic that nobody can jack with in Hollywood. And then, of course, it becomes one of the most successful TV franchises of all time, run by these two gentlemen, Benioff and Weiss, who have been blamed in large part for the failings of the final season. And now they are tackling yet another what sounds like incredibly complicated book series that has been thought to be not translatable to television.
Yeah, and the difference here being, especially, is that it was the scope of Game of Thrones that was so difficult to tackle. It's why it eventually made so much more sense for a television show, is because you could spend so much more time on it,
right.
like, with it.
Right.
But what Game of Thrones did have, and one of the reasons that in hindsight we now know definitively why the show was so good, is because it had beautiful prose and text and dialogue to fall back on straight from the book.
Very true.
This is, you're dealing with massive scope and some really heady stuff. And from what I understand, the dialogue is not really flowery. It's not really...
He doesn't spend, or the writer didn't like, spend pages describing like one helmet.
Yeah, or even and,
the
and
helm
the,
of a
the
sword.
Dialogue, I don't think the dialogue between characters is important, I want to say. And again, I haven't read it, so I can't really say it. But the
well,
point
they don't.
The point being that they don't have like the dialogue between characters from the brilliant author to fall back on early. So they're super fucked. From the get-go, they are going to be doing like the character and the world building and the plot building.
Oh, good.
So it's real. Like it's. It, I'm excited for it though because it's like, let's actually see. Let's see. What were you one hit wonders? Did you get lucky?
Okay.
Or do you actually have something?
I like this element of it.
Yeah.
That part of it is kind of cool. It's like, fine. You guys think we're chumps. We blew it. We suck. We shouldn't be credited with any of the success of the first six seasons. 7 and 8 were disastrous, yada, yada. We'll tackle something that's even more difficult. I like that aspect of
it. Yeah.
Because if they pull this off, then it's like, look, maybe the end of Game of Thrones was just really, really hard.
Yeah, exactly.
And if they don't pull it off, then we all get to fucking pile it on and talk about how shitty Benioff and Weiss are at their jobs.
Yes.
Which is frankly very fun.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
I don't know why. They're just very hateable. They like the Houston Rockets.
Yeah. So I'm not sure when we're getting that. Probably not for a while.
I would guess not.
2022, I think, is probably the safe bet.
I'm looking forward to reading a column about the pilot failing and them scrapping this project altogether.
Well, that's the thing about these Netflix deals. I think they just send you straight to series. So
oh,
I think there's
true.
Like...
Forgot, it's Netflix.
Yeah, there's no way that we don't see season one of
They're
this.
Like, here's $150 million.
Yeah,
go nuts, kids.
Yeah. Okay, this was another show that I thought about mentioning on the Patreon, but I didn't have all of the details. Literally a couple hours after we finished recording... further details launched about this. So I did just want to say
how fortunate,
how excited I am for next Friday. The Great British Bake Off is back with a new season showing on BBC Channel 4, premiering. And then the next day it will be on Netflix week by week. This will be my first Bake Off season that I'm following week by week, that I'm not just binging. Basically all the episodes are already available. So I'm very, very excited for this. They it's in a new place. They typically, this is one of the cool things about Bake Off for those of you that don't watch or that don't know.
I don't.
Ross, I'm speaking to you here.
Okay.
But all of these people, despite being on this reality show for 10 weeks or however long they make it for, they are traveling to this like little estate outside of London or wherever. And then they're all going back home to their regular jobs and like lives. And they are just having to like practice baking on the side. And then they come back for the weekend for the next 2 days of the show.
Holy crap.
Yeah. So it's like, they'll talk about that. They're like, oh, I didn't really have that much time to practice this recipe this week. So it just adds this, like this real element where
it's kind of cool.
They're just like going to camp on the weekends basically.
So it could be like, my kid wouldn't stop shitting the bed in the middle of the night. I haven't slept this week. Sorry.
Totally.
I'm going to bake really shittily.
Yeah. So this time, obviously they couldn't do that for the health and safety reasons. So this time they just like had everybody together, kind of like staying put
in a bubble,
in some sort of
was it a
bubble.
Great British baking bubble?
Great British baking bubble, exactly. You've got it exactly right there.
Wow,
jolly good, sir.
Gonna go ahead and title this episode "Great British Baking Bubble."
So that is very exciting. That is the type of light, warm programming that that we all need more of in our lives.
And I would remind the audience that I, not Barrett, am the marijuana connoisseur in the group, and he's a great British baking show guy, and I have never seen a single episode.
Yeah, so
strange, you know, times. Strange times.
Very exciting stuff there. Finally, my last piece here on Tidbits, and of course such, is that I got a lot of love. I got a lot of votes of confidence for a new show on Apple TV Plus called Ted Lasso.
Oh, fuck me. On Apple TV Plus, huh?
Yes. And I watched the first two episodes last night.
Oh.
And it is, again, very light, very warm, 30-minute show, very...
Ted Lasso. What's it about?
Jason Sudeikis plays an American football coach who had success with a mid-major college team and won a national championship with them. And he gets brought across the pond by a flailing Premier League team to be the new manager, even though he's never coached soccer in his life.
So he was an actual FOOTBALL football coach in America.
He was an American football coach.
Not FUTBOL football.
Right. And now
he goes to coach soccer.
Yes.
Well, that doesn't make any fucking sense, Bear. Why would you hire a football coach to coach a soccer team?
Well, you're going to have to watch and see. So right off top, just a couple quick comments here.
Uh-huh.
Jason Sudeikis, who is from Kansas City, Missouri, if I'm not mistaken. I know he's from Kansas City.
I can use Google Machine.
I'm just not sure if he's from Kansas City, Kansas, or Kansas City, Missouri. He is using a...
Fairfax, Virginia.
No.
Yes.
No.
I swear to God.
He's got ties to Kansas City.
Then maybe he was born in Fairfax and raised in Kansas City. I'm getting into the Wikipedia now. I'll continue to research.
Okay. I'm positive he's a Kansas City guy. But anyways.
Yep. He moved to Overland Park, Kansas, which he describes as his hometown.
There you go.
So there you go.
So he is using a Southern accent that I don't think I've ever heard Jason Sudeikis talk with. And it's jarring for a little bit. And I'm not sure if it's a good Southern accent, but it's the weird part of it is that it doesn't feel totally necessary in the first episode. You're like, and it's kind of like, why isn't Jason Sudeikis just talking like Jason Sudeikis? That seems like it would have been fine for this.
Okay.
By the second episode, it makes a little bit more sense. He is playing this character that is kind of a Gump in a way. He's really nice.
Like
he's
Forrest Gump?
Yeah, but what I mean is that he's just kind of like a... He's a really nice guy, is what I'm saying.
He's sort of an everyman doofus?
And he could potentially be taken for a fool in some instances, even though he is, I think, going to turn out to be really smart and intelligent and like know what he's doing a little bit.
Yeah, because as we know, Forrest Gump, massively successful ping pong player and then investor in early Macintosh
and such. I don't mean to say that the characters are the same at all, like in many ways. It's just there's that something about that he's that naivety and that southernness and that niceness, that genuine, that authenticity.
I follow.
That makes me use that word.
I follow.
So, but yeah, I wasn't sure I was in, and then like with 5 minutes left in the first episode, I was like, oh, yep, I'm definitely going to keep watching this. I could probably watch 6 episodes of this tonight if there wasn't a small puppy trying to jump on the couch and bite my wrist.
Take
and kill
a shit
me.
On your foot.
Yeah, nonstop.
I want to clarify something, Barrett, because I know there were people who were yelling at their radios earlier. Kansas is not the state in which the Kansas City Chiefs play. Okay.
I am aware.
Overland Park, Kansas would not make him by default a Kansas City Chiefs fan, but he started his career in improv comedy in Kansas City, Missouri, which is where I'm assuming the Chiefs fanhood really solidified.
Okay.
Even though he was already in the vicinity, could have been a fan, he did live and start his career in Kansas City, Missouri. So
yeah,
that's what I'm guessing when...
He's a big KC fan. He reps this brand out of KC that does like denim and t-shirts called Baldwin. He's always wearing their stuff.
No shit. Okay. Big KC guy.
He's
then,
a big
in general.
KC guy. Yes. Okay. Yes. That's why I know that...
Just wanted to make sure.
And in the show, he plays a guy that is from Kansas.
Okay. Okay.
which is where the Southern accent kind of comes into play. Even but though I'm not even sure people in Kansas have that type of accent. I don't know.
We don't have accents, and we're from Houston.
Yeah, well, people are always Houston's like, not a place where we have accents.
I know, but people are always like, "You're from Texas. Where's your accent?" Sure. And we're like, we're from Houston.
City. We're city children.
We're from the melting pot of the United States that's not New York City.
We're children of the city. Anyways, so if you do have time for a 30-minute, anybody out there needs just like a nice 30-minute comedy to throw on.
Children of the city.
With some warmth and some laughter and some love and some hijinks and some good old-fashioned wholesome fun.
Oh, hell.
And some not wholesome fun. Ted Lasso. I've agreed with the Clam Fam. It is a pretty fun show.
Any sex dolls so far?
I've not seen a sex doll. No.
What about milking tables?
No milking tables as of yet.
Okay. No. Just asking. We've done a lot of comedies recently with sex dolls and milking tables.
People are saying that there might be one in episode 7, though.
Curb and Dave, both sex dolls.
Yeah.
Of course, we all remember the milking table from Dave as well. If you don't, go watch Dave season 1 and listen to our coverage several weeks back on Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. Any more tidbits and such?
That's all I've got for you today, man.
Well, Barrett, I guess that means it's time to ride back out into that prairie, stare up at the sky.
Oh, are we getting on our horses already?
And just thank our lucky stars we're here in Big Sky, Montana.
Boy.
On the Clamstone Ranch, looking up.
Boy, howdy.
Just saying, shit, that's a lot of stars.
That is a lot of stars. And I tell you what, this damn Clamstone, I'm just trying to protect it, Ross. I want something to give my kids.
My brand is on the inside. We're going to talk about episodes 8 and 9, the penultimate and finale of season 1, which it turns out were pretty much one episode. It's a two-parter.
Oh, is that right?
In title.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
It says The Unraveling Part 1, and then I believe the second episode 9 is titled The Unraveling Part 2. And what we have here is basically they had an episode and they were like, it's eight episodes. It's for the birds. Let's get a ninth out of this. And they really chopped it in half, sort of.
Tell me where you want to start with this.
Well, can we just speak to the overall general ridiculous nature of the way this season sort of wrapped itself into what you started to describe last week as a soap opera, all right? Soap opera on a ranch, basically. And we began the first couple episodes really making comparisons to Game of Thrones and then another HBO show revolving around a patriarch that is money, power, crazy, which the name of which is slipping my mind. Barrett, help me, for the love of God.
Outer Banks?
No, not Outer Banks. Damn it! On HBO with Brian Cox.
Oh, he says, fuck off a lot. Succession.
Succession. I kept wanting to say Inception, and I was like, that's most certainly not it. Succession, one of our favorite shows on TV.
Yes.
We obviously cover here as well, and we'll be covering whenever we get a new season of that. Now it has sort of veered away from Succession and way further into that soap opera territory these last couple episodes, as it's just like the most utterly insane and dramatic shit I've ever seen. And now I want to come clean with the Clam Fam on something. When we covered episode 7 in our last podcast, I had not gotten to watch the last 20 minutes of the final episode.
Confession time. Pull back the curtain.
Pulling back the curtain here.
Now you know.
This does not happen often, but the part where Rip is out there with the tourists who fall off the mountain, and then he shoots the bear, and then the reason I'm copping to this is because we end up dealing with this so much in episode 8.
Yes.
I hadn't seen that yet, so I was just watching Barrett describe it and sort of smiling and laughing in my
own. I did my whole intro bit based on it.
Uh-huh, I know. I remember sitting here going, I don't know what the fuck is happening. And so I got to watch that scene, and oh my God, just from then on, it is so ridiculous how they chose to like, just because they were in the vein where it was serious and there was enough silly drama, but it didn't feel silly overall. It didn't feel silly. And by the end of the season, I'm like, wait, okay. Things have just gone so out of control insane. There isn't a character who's not completely derailing. It's not like there's one person who's like kind of still on the horse. They've all completely fallen off, to use an analogy that might translate.
Yeah, yes.
And it's fucking madness, frankly. And people can't stop dying everywhere or being murdered.
Yeah, the body count is really high on this show.
Look, man, a fucking sheriff or an officer falls off her horse and is impaled by some type of object.
Yes, yeah. Because nothing can go smoothly. They're literally like if there is a scene about to happen where a new person is involved,
they might die.
It's about to go horribly awry.
and Rip's probably going to be right there to be either blamed for it or directly responsible for it.
That's correct.
You don't know which one.
Now,
if not him, then Casey.
Let me just jump in here and say.
Uh-huh.
I thought that the way that this season ended was really stupid and bad, and it made me think less of season one.
Yeah, I mean, look, I won't say it.
After everything, uh-huh. after an entire season of a brewing conflict between the neighborhood developer and John Dutton of the Yellowstone Ranch, after many episodes of Beth Dutton being the evil one that he needed to keep around so that they could take this guy down, so that they could, you know, poach the stock. They found out where the market is, where it's trading. $3 a stock. We're going to buy the whole company. We're going to own it. We're going to tear this guy down. I'm Beth Dutton. I'm going to get your wife to start cheating on you with my guy. The whole thing.
Was that
right?
Her assistant?
Yeah.
That she gets to bang out Dan's wife?
Yeah.
God, Beth's a psycho. But the only reason I'm telling you this, Barrett, is because I know you can't do anything about it.
Everything. The whole thing. And then at the end of it, we're just going to kill him.
Well, we don't know if he's dead.
We're just going to, the guy that we're having the issue with, that we've been trying to figure out how to deal with for this entire season.
We're just going
to
hang him
why didn't you just kill him from the get-go?
Yeah,
If it's this easy to just kidnap anybody that the Yellowstone Ranch is having a problem with and just fucking hang him on a tree, why didn't they just do that from the get-go?
Oh, hell, Barrett, people come out here into the sad forest all the time. They can't take it anymore, and they just end it.
Like,
National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. Take that seriously. Google it. We can talk more about that another time. But what the fuck?
This made absolutely no sense to me. After everything to try to take this guy down, which with the succession level, you know, business play and like manipulation and
power
like
and
game playing and like, yeah, power.
Struggle.
Power struggles. Like, yeah. And dynamics. Right.
Sure.
After all this, we bring in the fixer, and then we have Thomas Rainwater and his guy coming over, and we don't know this guy that's always sitting on the side. We don't know what he's really up to, but uh-huh. he seems kind of sinister. And then they're making this deal, and one of them's going to own the hotel. One of them's going to own the casino. Like, it's this, we're really getting like in the mix here. Like, how's this all going to shake out? And then they just kidnap him and kill him?
Now, there are several elements to this that I agree with. The broad daylight kidnapping, in which all you have to do is have several cowboys follow a guy to his general car area so that you can then sort of force him into a different car and then drive off and murder him in the forest and make it look like a suicide. Yeah, that wasn't a great plot twist. And it's the reason that I'm holding out hope. We don't see Dan die. They just kick the Look, Casey slaps the horse out from under him and says, like, fuck it, and walks off. And we see him walking off as Dan is struggling in the background. This was not a clean snap, neck break, you're done hanging. This was you're going to wriggle until you choke to death hanging.
Yeah.
Even though they had the knot tied, which doesn't make sense to me because the knot is the thing that breaks your neck in a new situation. I remember learning about this in, like, medieval history or whatever. Okay. Not something I've studied personally. And it makes me think Dan might not be dead. Also, other reason I think Dan is not dead. Yes, that was an outrageous amount of time to waste with us watching scenes between Dan and Thomas Rainwater, figuring out the details of how they were going to fuck John Dutton.
Yeah.
For him to just then be kidnapped, whisked away, and hung. And then for anybody to buy it as a suicide in a season where there are already several members of the Dutton family under investigation, under mysterious and weird circumstances, why would they? Of course the police, the first place they're going to look here is the Dutton family again.
Yeah.
I cannot. I'm thinking our boy Rip is back there by the tree still, cuts him down. Or shoots the rope in dramatic fashion and saves Dan's life or something. And then they use some other play on Dan to flip him within the Thomas Rainwater plan. I don't know. All right, I've never seen a preview or anything for season two. It just seemed to me, if that was legit and Dan is dead, first of all, wow, we wasted a lot of time there. But just a horrific waste of a badass kid. Dan's a good character who has not done that much yet other than take it on the chin.
Yeah.
And have a couple meetings that we were forced to watch.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, he's the lines that he has to take. I took you for a cuckold. Like, he would have stayed in there and watched. That's fucked up. That's fucked up. Beth is crazy. It got me to the point where I'm rooting for Dan to have some vengeance on Beth.
Yeah. No, I mean,
Dan's just trying to get a business deal done.
Yeah, we really don't see Dan do anything all that awful just yet.
No, he's just getting his ass kicked up.
Like,
there.
let him become a little bit more of a villain. I just, yeah, the whole thing with, like, needing Beth's evilness so that they could, like, insidiously take this guy down from the inside, basically, and get to his wife. And
then,
like,
having, like, basically nothing to do with her in all of those
right,
scenes
and
not mattering.
Needing all, maybe they're going to say, oh, he killed himself because he found out his wife was cheating on him, which, again, doesn't make any sense, like, especially within the context of this show where everybody is looking at the Yellowstone Ranch every time somebody mysteriously goes missing. They're obviously known to, like, you know, use these types of tactics to get rid of problems.
Then again, you're right, yeah, because they do have a lot of excuses. They could say his wife cheated on him, his company was bought out from under him, he couldn't take it, he went out into the forest and he killed himself. And then it is tied to Beth.
Did they ever buy the company? Did they ever strike on the?
I'm assuming she did. She said she was going to do it the next morning, and that was, you know, they were doing like a penny stock type of situation or whatever. I don't know what, I didn't understand the different market they found his company trading on, but it also seems stupid that he would trade his company on any market and not expect the Dutton family to find out and purchase it if it was that cheap.
And I mean, are we just like, if they took control of his company and they had all this dirt on him and they had stolen his wife, like, then why did they need to kill him? Like, are we just a straight up mafia now?
Yeah, I don't know. And who made that call? Was it John Dutton? Was it just the build up?
And why don't
of...
they just whack Thomas Rainwater?
If they can just so easily, let's just take all these fucking random people out. Because what we get in episodes 8 and 9 is everybody in the county turning on John Dutton, okay? He's dealing with a regular-ass cop.
I got another big issue with that. Why the shit did the cop just was holding the stolen evidence that he took the day before in his pocket?
And then all it took was John Dutton going, give it to me. Give it to me. And he was like, oh, shucks, I've been caught. It's here in my coat pocket. Gosh darn it, I should have left it in the truck. What a fucking stupid twist.
Come on, man.
That made me feel silly.
Hide that. Destroy the evidence.
It would have made more sense if he was like, it's in my ass. You're never getting it. Like, what? He has it nicely bagged in his pocket, and he just goes, all right. Here
yeah,
it is.
I just,
in front of the other investigator who's like, wow, I wonder how that happened. And he's like, fellas, I forgot it was there. And then John's like, I'm making a list and your name's on it. Now, what, this random fucking cop? This is the guy you're worried about? And if so, hell, if you're going to whack prominent, well-known property developers in the woods, fuck this cop. Y'all could have stuck him inside of the bear.
Yeah.
Oh, we found him like this. The bear ate him. Why isn't he digested? Oh, we don't know. Nobody cares. Close the books. Dutton family wins again. Like, this is insane. Like, it's just got... look, I do remember a bit of a fuss around the end of season one when it initially occurred.
Do you?
I remember people being like, damn, season one was so good except for the ending.
What the end of season one made me kind of think about and remember is that this is a show that, like, somehow miraculously talked Kevin Costner into being its lead. And then
because of the network it's on, I would say, is the reason that's a miracle.
And then for the most part, it's a bunch of like actors that we don't really know outside of Wes Bentley, who's like a...
Oh, we know a couple of them, but they're random.
But they're random. You know, it's a random collection. And it was put on Paramount Network, a network that not a lot of people know about, can figure out how to access.
And again, this is the funny part, because they literally chose to switch from CBS All Access to Paramount Plus on the backbone of the argument that Paramount is a universally recognizable brand.
Yeah.
That is literally what they've announced.
So it's just like that kind of, I was like, okay, well, I'm certainly, look, far be it from me to just pack up my saddle and get on my stallion and ride out of Big Country. You know that's not me.
Hell, Barrett, I'd hate to tell you.
I'm never going to do that.
But the chance for you to do that, that day is gone.
That day is long gone.
You're not going anywhere.
I'm not going
You're
anywhere.
You're stuck here on Clamstone.
I'm stuck here. I've got the C branded on my chest already.
Mine's on the inside.
Yeah. And I'm going to live out my days here on the Clamstone. It just is what it is.
Uh-huh.
And it's something that I'm going to have to make peace with.
It is.
No, so I'm...
But just a disappointing ending.
Yeah. Sort of. So it just got me thinking, like, okay... This was not from the get-go. Like, it wasn't on HBO. It wasn't supposed to be, like, the next amazing TV series. It was this like soapy action drama that they had this crown jewel and Kevin Costner to star in, and it ended like a new show that didn't really know what it wanted to be yet, and didn't really know that it was going to have such a massive following yet either.
And
so I'm hopeful that seasons 2 and 3 are better. And I don't expect I don't expect them to reduce the drama, because I feel like that's just a part of this show.
It is
that,
like, very much so.
Crazy shit that's is gonna not, happen at, going to happen at every turn.
Yeah,
but I'd at least like them to execute the tying up the plot a little bit better, because this was just. This was messy. This was not a...
Yeah, it was. No lie. The ending of the season was messy.
Everything that we spent time building up to, we just had the rug pulled out from under us, basically, and it reduced the... It took away from, like, everything that had already happened.
The last thing I'll say about Yellowstone is that I also remember the narrative of, it was solid during season one, but that is not when you had people yelling from the hilltops on Clamstone Ranch, you got to watch this show. Season 2 is when it solidified itself. It's okay. One of these where, like, they sort of had, like, the sparks came in season 1, and it was like, oh, we got a little something here. They chose to, rather than wrap up anything at the finale, parlay it into season 2, or, you know, you never know how these decisions are made, but this is the way it played out. We don't really get any resolution at the end of the, in the finale of season 1. Most of the big picture conflict stuff is still brewing, if not all of it. We've introduced new conflicts in the form of, like, a female in the bunkhouse and, like, some little twists here and there. And, like, Ryan Bingham wants off the ranch, but, like, and he tells Rip, I'm not going to do crime. But, like, nothing is really solved. John Dutton still appears to be dying of fucking cancer. He's mm-hmm. puking up blood and shit. But season 2 is when you really started to have people, like, I think it makes the turn back away from silly. Because the first 4 or 5 episodes have all the same elements of the crazy soap opera drama. They're just not silly. Mm-hmm. They still make you like, well, that's ridiculous, but holy shit, it's awesome and crazy.
Yeah. Yes.
Then yeah. It gets so silly towards the end where you're just like, wait a minute. Now there's just a couple of random Asian tourists.
The dead bear and the Asian tourists.
The guy throwing himself to his death was one of the sillier fucking things I've ever seen. Even in the context of, like, I get it, and his girlfriend just died or whatever. Like, bro, what? And then the just the whole thing, all of the ending was so, it just got a little silly. And I'm very confident that they reel that back in with season 2 and 3, but keep the outstanding ridiculousness around.
Yeah, yeah.
Because 2 and 3 is, this last couple seasons of Yellowstone is when people have been like, this is a great show.
Okay.
So I'm not worried about the ending for season 1 at all. In fact, I would say I didn't even flinch. I was just sort of like, okay, the fuck was that? But we spent 5 minutes of one of the final episodes of the opening season of the show, the premiere season, on, like, close-up stripper curves.
Yes.
I stared at that woman's belly button for 3.5 minutes. Yep. What the fuck was that? Like,
that
you,
was,
you just can't, it was just weird.
That was...
There was a lot of weird decision-making.
It was. And to me, that little piece was like, hey, look, this show could be on HBO.
That's it. No, that scene was, and Barrett, it's because I've watched, like, Sopranos, hey, look, 100 times.
We can show titties.
That was a Sopranos move. The Sopranos regularly reminded you of the grittiness and the whole, just the operation, the span of the mafia thing, by showing you, because one of the places they owned and worked out of was called Bada Bing, a strip club. Mm-hmm. And they would give you these, like, sort of sexy, just stripper dancing scenes. Mm-hmm. This was straight out of that handbook, but zoomed in enough because they can't really do they don't go full HBO nudity where it's just
there were breasts.
I know there were titties.
There were breasts.
There were breasts and there were nipples, but it wasn't HBO style nudity where it's just like, this is a naked person dancing. We're not zooming in and out. You're just looking at them because we don't give a fuck. Okay. It was like, here's a tasteful shot of her hip bone for a minute and a half.
Right.
Now we'll move up to the belly button, only to slightly zoom out and show you another stripper in the background peeling off her shirt.
Or just graze the nipple.
And then, like, yeah. And then the I will alternate both hot and cold, tweaking. And I don't remember the rest of that Arrested Development part, but oh my God, that's another great one. There's nipple tweaking talk. Anyway, it just didn't fit in. Then the next thing you know, one of the former dancers is Rip's like, hell, you know what I need? More fucked up shit in my life.
Again,
I'm putting you in the bunkhouse.
Again, like that was so out of nowhere. They had not seeded that at all. Rip just shows up at a strip club, and suddenly there's a new character who he has a history with. It was a former stripper and that
seemingly
knows how to rope and ride and is perfect for this new job that he needs somebody to do.
And she's
like, well, I want full-time work. And so I'm living in the bunkhouse, and it's fine because I've put my ass in all these dudes' faces before.
And we might as well get this over with.
Yeah. But
Ryan Bingham's like, what have I gotten myself into?
She's eyeballing Ryan Bingham. Those other cowboys, not a chance. But
Bingham?
Ryan Bingham, ooh, man. That might be a problem in the bunkhouse.
What's a cowboy with a heart of gold.
What's not a problem in the bunkhouse is Jimmy finally getting his hat, just like we talked about.
Dude, that moment was so huge, and probably my favorite moment of the final two episodes.
Absolutely,
because
yes.
We've been making fun of this idiot's hat the whole season.
Not even close. That was the best moment of the final two episodes.
And the best written moment.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, cool, they're hazing Jimmy again. He can't find his hat. They're going to beat his ass or, like, stick something in it. And then they're like, just kidding, Jimmy. And that was like a, hey, kid, like Mean Joe Green moment. And that was just really well executed.
Yes.
And then 3 minutes later, they're like, and here's a stripper.
Jimmy, perfect too on the reception of the hat. Like,
yeah,
really well done. Just kind of, that would be, you can imagine how emotional of a moment that would be.
He became a real cowboy.
Yeah,
right,
you're the new guy. You're having a hard time, you know, cracking this thing.
We've beat your ass for
your
a month
ass
and a half.
Your ass hurts from riding this goddamn horse for so many hours of so many days.
Yeah.
And now these guys have taken your awful
Scarecrow
South Padre Island spring break cowboy hat. What's a guy to do? And they got you a real live Stetson, man.
Now, unfortunately, he still looks like a dumbass.
You're one of them.
But the hat is a step up, to be sure.
It was great, though. And he played it really well, and I enjoyed that scene.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we're really looking forward to coverage of old season two.
Oh, any other things that we needed to...
There was one other thing
I wanted to touch on.
Jamie wants to run for attorney general, and then his dad's like, no, you can't.
The Monica-Casey breakup.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care. Do you think Casey and Monica splitsville for good?
Don't care. No. Completely lost me with this storyline. It was so ridiculous the way things unfolded with Casey and Monica. And like, no, I don't know if they're done for good, and I don't care. I'm unclear on her brain injuries, long-lasting effects. They've just introduced a stripper into the bunkhouse that looks a little bit like her.
No, it's not Ryan Bingham.
Also, he's the Dutton. He's the Dutton in the hen house.
Sorry, that's my mistake.
That's also my mistake.
Another screaming at the radio moment.
It's my mistake.
Casey who walks in, and he's this badass, good-looking hunk of a cowboy.
And barely takes a second look at the woman even. He's just like, I'm fucking here to fucking cowboy. I'm back.
I'm here to rope some cattle.
My wife left me.
And kill some real estate developers. And I'm all out of cattle.
But no, Jamie gets, his dad's like, Jamie chose attorney general over me. I'm going to fucking take away the thing he left us for. And then that chick that works for Jamie that they've been trying to hook him up with is like, one time in your life, I want you to do something just because you want to. And he's like, well, you're already on top of me. And then it's not even him doing it. That's just the funny part of it.
And that's when Jamie loses his virginity.
And
is
that's
what I took
also
from that scene.
When Jamie, and we find out that Jamie's office, man, it's in a highly trafficked area. The whole time they're making out and she's straddling him, which is a good 45 seconds, there are like 60 cars passing in the background, dude. It's fucking dark outside. Like, this is a populated downtown area.
It's Bozeman, baby.
Unbelievable.
That's life in Bozeman.
Other than that, I think that's about it.
Yeah, I think we can wrap up Yellowstone season one talk there. We're going to be jumping into season two. I don't know if we're going to take a week off yet or if we're going to jump right in, but it'll be either next week or the week following where we have more Yellowstone coverage.
Yes. Either this upcoming podcast next week or the one after that, we'll start up Yellowstone season two. Just dependent on how much time Barrett and I find in the weekend.
Yeah, yes.
So y'all go ahead and start whenever you want, and we'll be right there. Is what we're saying.
Yeah, and never lose sight of that big Montana sky.
Never. Just never forget it's up there.
Keep in your mind what's important, and that's the land around here,
and family.
Family.
Unless that family wants to run for attorney general. This episode of OCC is brought to you by Felix Gray Glasses. Barrett and I constantly have our faces in screens from morning to night. There's no cutting back, especially in 2020, where so many of us are relying on screens to communicate with friends, family, get work done, do our jobs day to day. Too much screen time results in tired, dry eyes, headaches, blurry vision, and trouble sleeping. As somebody who's worn glasses and contacts since they were a young teenage lad, I can tell you, by the end of every day, my eyes are freaking exhausted. I also live in the allergy capital of the fucking world in Austin, Texas. Felix Gray blue light glasses, so effective. The most effective computer glasses on the market with the quality of brand name designer frames. They've become the internet's favorite blue light glasses. I slap mine on every night and they give me instant relief. It's incredible. They filter out 90% of high energy blue light, eliminate 99% of the harsh glare coming from all of our screens. And I'm telling you, I do gaming on the side in the evenings. And by the time I get to that point in my day, my eyes are usually burned out. The Felix Grays are a godsend. They're huge. And unlike other brands who use cheap blue light coatings that are ineffective and can chip or scratch, Felix Gray uses a proprietary blue light technology embedded directly into the lens. They've got prescription, they've got non-prescription, and readers. You do not have to be a blind bat like me. They've got you covered with optical glasses for work and sleep glasses in the evening that are clinically proven to increase melatonin secretion when worn leading up to bedtime. Why would you buy glasses from a company whose sole focus isn't making glasses? I do not know. I trust Felix Gray because they make the best blue light glasses in the game. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/OCC and get a pair of blue light glasses from the pros. Shipping and returns are totally free. That's FelixGray glasses. FelixGrayGlasses.com/OCC. FelixGrayGlasses.com/OCC. And now let's quickly talk about The Boys Season 2, Episodes 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Where to start?
So let's start with the meat of this little arc here,
meat.
Which is that through three.
Meat.
After the end of three.
Meat.
We have a big reveal.
What
and that
this?
Is, spoiler alert, if you're not through three.
What's her name?
Stormfront.
Stormfront.
Is a baddie. And I don't mean in the good Instagram way. I mean, she is a supervillain.
Yeah, she's a fucked up individual.
Yes. Turns out that Stormfront, while also supporting feminism, is also a vile racist.
Indeed. Which is unfortunate. Because you almost saw her as like, okay, she's going to be the bad girl, right? She goes against Vought and she's like into social issues and uses social media and like is a feminist and like, yeah. And then no. And then no. It turns out she just is really, really horny for evil.
Yeah.
Like, she just really wants to just, she's just a bad person.
Yeah. So she is.
Her and Homeland are probably going to bone, guessing. Taking a shot in the dark.
Oh, look, I'm seeing conflict arising.
Are you? I'm seeing sex.
No. Big conflict.
Oh, Barrett, conflict often leads to sex.
Oh, I think you're way off there.
I might be.
I think that Stormfront is going to, I think they're going to put us into a situation where we're having to choose between Homelander, who I literally said a week ago was worse than Joffrey,
uh-huh.
Baratheon,
uh-huh.
and Stormfront, who now we have to hate more because...
More?
I guess, right?
No!
No?
I don't think... Even if she's a bigoted demon bitch, think about all that Homelander has done
already. Yeah, Homelander literally murdered an entire plane full of women and children, so...
And was literally unfazed.
Yeah.
Like, that was like the 10th worst thing he had done that year.
Yeah. Okay, so we're putting them on equal level playing fields of evil, I'd say.
And we'll see who wins out.
And we'll see who wins out.
Who's
worse? We're
going
to have an evil versus evil thing here, is what it looks like.
I just thought he would see, because none of the other...
No, he's looking pissed off when he's like having to serve food to the homeless and she's got the screen time up front with the newscasts.
I know that. I get that conflict. But what I'm saying is he's never had a person on his little team that's pure evil like he is.
Okay, that's
fair.
It
seems like the inevitable conflict that will arise from this is him being like, you're taking the spotlight, and her being like, you like it. And then they make out and they bang.
Okay. All right.
Look, if I was writing the show, that's just what I would have done, which is why I'm not writing the show.
All right. You're off top, it sounded crazy, but the more you say it...
You're getting horny for it.
The more I can see it. The more I can see them... Yeah, why not? Why not, if you're a bad dude, why not have a bad bitch? Right?
I mean, his old lady that is deceased because he burned her face off with his laser eyes, she wasn't a good girl. She was a bad girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I'm just saying.
That's true. That is true. So maybe they do. Maybe there is conflict that resolves itself with sexy time.
Because Homelander's currently doing this playhouse thing with Butcher's wife.
Yes.
Which isn't real, and he doesn't actually care or like Butcher's wife.
Yeah.
You feel like Homelander needs himself a girlfriend, right? A public-facing girlfriend, perhaps, to bolster his image. They're always talking about ways to make these superheroes look better in the public eye, and he obviously has an incredibly fake persona, living a basically double life, his public-facing one, and then his actual evil Homelander drinking titty milk life. And it wouldn't shock me at all if this Stormfront villain slid into that role.
Okay.
And she uses the fucking TikTok and such.
Now, here's the thing, though. This setup is that...
That's a dark reference. Go ahead.
Here's... TikTok. Also, shouts to the actor, children, Nicholas and Cameron Crovetti.
What are we children of?
Who played Max and Josh, the tiny little murderous shits on Big Little Lies. They were the children of Nicole Kidman.
Love them.
You recognize him as Homelander's son?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's the same fucking kid. Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's a serial killer.
Definitely.
Yeah.
What was I saying? Oh, okay. The one thing about this setup is that it seems inevitable that we can't have both Stormfront and Homelander on this show.
No.
And
no,
Homelander is too important to the show.
Oh, yeah.
He's not going anywhere.
She's inevitably going to die.
So that's
a matter of when.
That's the one thing, that's my hang up here, is that I know how this is going to end. Like, I'm like 99% positive how this ends.
But so much potential for both sexy time and horrific shit between now and her death. I am with you. I do think she is a temporary character. It does not seem these two can exist simultaneously. But I'm still into, like, I liked the way they sort of twisted the knife into us. They're like, and this is, look, you have another really, really, really bad, powerful, fucked up villain to deal with on the level of Homelander, but not quite as powerful. Because, again, Homelander is Superman, but bad, basically.
And I mean, I guess you listen to me make that complaint, and we could literally make that complaint about any comic book franchise that exists right now. There will always be a new bad guy.
To kill. You have to have one.
And the characters that are titular, in most cases, Batman, Spider-Man, the Avengers, whoever, like, they're not going anywhere.
Right.
Right? Like, we're going to get rid of the bad guy somehow.
Yeah, it'd be pretty hard to continue the Batman franchise if Batman dies halfway through the first movie.
So despite Homelander is not a good guy, per se, but he is absolutely, like, a core piece of the show.
For at least, like, a 3-4-5 season run.
Yeah.
That's not a guy you get two seasons of and he's gone. He's the big bad that needs to be there.
You got the boys, who all seem pretty safe. You know, I could see Mother's Milk or the French one.
Frenchie. That's literally what they call him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perhaps they're expendable at some point through the seasons. But Huey, Butcher, Stormlight, and Stormlight? Stormfront and Stormlight?
Lighthouse.
What's Starlight. Starlight.
Don't spill your beans, Huey's dummy.
Huey, Starlight, and Homelander seem like they're staying put.
Yeah, I agree.
I knew as soon as the Deep rode up on that whale, I knew we were killing that whale.
that guy's so awesome,
This show loves to make you uncomfortable with that, with the violence.
I think
they're going to kill a massive whale. They're going to break a dude's hands off by his wrists.
They're going to burn people's faces in half. They're going to do the shit like with the lasers from Homelander's eyes.
Yeah.
But the Deep is the funniest thing on the show right now.
Yes.
He is the most hilariously sad comic relief ever. it's the best writing on the show right now, though.
Also,
I'm
pretty sure that's Patton Oswalt as the voice of his gills.
Is it really?
That sounds like Patton Oswalt.
That would
anyway.
So be a thing Patton Oswalt did.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't shock me. The therapy he does with his gills, the inevitable death of that whale, and his horribly planned idiot.
Did you realize at first that those were sharks surrounding the boat?
Yes, but I thought they were mechanical.
Okay. I thought that they were some type of machine or mechanical.
Yeah, they look
military things.
They didn't do a great job with those sharks. I didn't catch
quickly that this was the Deep with
controlling the sharks.
With his animal cavalry.
Neither did I. Was very confused.
Coming to block the boat.
The sharks didn't seem to be moving naturally through the water.
No, they didn't.
Naturally. they weren't. Anyway, I don't really know, other than the big reveal and the several fun things we've touched on, the episodes are humming. We're just sort of in a place now where it's like, okay, we've set up the first three episodes of season two. Where are things going to go from here in terms of... Because we've got several conflicts brewing. We've got the super terrorists, or what is he wanting to call them now?
Super villains. He doesn't like super terrorists. He likes super villain.
Okay, so he's trying to like unpoliticize it, perhaps? I'm not sure what the angle is there for him.
So... I feel like that is a...
Is it because this is all his fault and now he's trying to minimize it?
That's been interesting because he's so about like the America, right?
He's very clearly like, supposed to be like our...
Patriotic and, yes. And you know, oh, it's got to be nationalist, right?
Yeah.
It's America. I don't care about the globe.
He's supposed to be like a very conservative, yep. Right-wing superhero
I think it's then like another twist that he doesn't like super terrorist. That I think they're like adding like the comic book piece of it, where sure. He's like, "Oh, it's got to be villain because
I'm a superhero."
Because I'm a superhero.
But yeah. I thought he was the one who was like branding it that last season as a super terrorist thing. And I want to clarify some. I mean that Homelander seems to embody a lot of the things that people stereotypically put as right wing, Republican, conservative, like the. I mean, there's a lot of shit that he's doing that is just straight up like propaganda-esque.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Where you're just like, clearly, he has a narrative. He wants to play that narrative, and there's no other narratives. Which is weird when he starts trying to think. That what I mean is, I'm trying to figure where he's going with this. Because he clearly has something he wants to accomplish.
And so it's surprising. It's a bit of a wrinkle that he's not all in on the super terrorist
exactly.
Name.
Like because what is that about?
That would fit the narrative that he's running with at the current moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which has been the only narrative we've seen him run with from a public-facing side
right. The
whole time. So now behind doors for him to be pushing for the super villain thing... It's curious to see how that'll shape out compared to some of the conflicts that they're dealing with internally at Vought, compared to obviously the fact that the boys are still going to be hunting them. There's a lot to play with. We've got what?
I think probably seven episodes to go.
I'm assuming this is a 10-episode season.
I believe so, yeah.
As Barrett and I said, we'll be caught up with the boys to be covering live with y'all starting next week.
Yeah, so 4 is available. 5 is out tomorrow. When we record next week, we'll cover 4 and 5.
We'll be all the way caught up with the boys season 2. Looking forward to covering it the rest of the way. A lot of potential, a lot of weird stuff to play with, obviously, is what we have come to expect from the boys. And again, my favorite thing of this season so far has definitely been the deep... And I hope we continue to get more screen time from that dude because just what
he really is, and you didn't expect this after season one, but
not at all.
Chase Crawford is out there stealing scenes.
I did not expect that at all, man.
And they are. I like
it's
that
not
they're,
close right now. Though,
I like that they're playing with his character in like this sort of like, of course you're not redeemable. You sexually assaulted our main character, but like, is there room for you to find some type of goodness?
Right.
Right. So I like that kind of like that weird, you know,
in between. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. What can you do with this guy who committed, you know, something horrific or committed this horrific act
or many horrific acts,
but
probably.
Wants to turn that page. And it's just, you know,
he does seem to really want to change.
Right. Exactly. So they're playing with that like subversive thing about a guy that does something bad like that. Like, what can he do then?
And then him finding religion, and all
Church
the different
of the collective. That's great when somebody immediately is Stormfront.
Would you join
like,
the Church of the Collective?
Would you join the Church of the Collective?
And he's like, maybe. Yeah, he's fucking great. Anyway, we'll cover the boys through episode 5, season 2, episode 5, and 4 next week right here on OCC.
Doubles.
Very quickly, because there's not much for us to say. Lovecraft Country episode 5. I will say this.
There's not a lot to say, and yet there is a lot to say.
Well, I enjoyed it. Meaning that we don't have a ton of time left today, and we do want to obviously stay up to speed with Lovecraft Country. But in terms of takes, I thought this episode was much better than 4. 4 was just that bad to me, though, also, or just that uninteresting. I didn't care for the Indiana Jones adventure episode. All right, I like the more these ones. Like this one.
Can I touch on episode 4 real quick?
Yeah, yeah.
Last week I wasn't totally. Sure, I was having a hard time like putting my finger on why I disliked that episode so much, and then I ended up reading this kind of review / recap on Vulture that I thought really helped put some words kind of express it in some words that I hadn't come up with yet. And when we talked about all the stuff that episode four was similar to, Indiana Jones, the Goonies, that type of thing, what is like one thing about all of those action adventures? They are fun. Mm-hmm. Fun stuff happens. And there was nothing, there was no lightness, there was no fun in our little Indiana Jones adventure there. So yeah. It's like,
mix is off then.
The mix was just really, really off with that. And so it made like scenes that should have been cool, like the crumbling little catwalk or whatever. There was nothing to like, it wasn't backing it up with anything fun or any good story or any like proper kind of development. It just was just happening. Yeah, exactly. So it just kind of, it definitely missed the boat for me. Sorry.
No, and this episode was a big step up from that one for me in terms of like, it felt like we were sort of back to the storylines.
Yeah.
At least the ones I sort of understand anyway.
100%. I liked this episode a lot better. This episode absolutely it did a whole bunch narratively, but it also was like, again, and I mentioned this with what Yellowstone was trying to do with the stripper scene, but this was like, everything about this episode was
exotic
like,
dancer.
Was this is HBO. Everything about it. We can get gross as hell. We can do all sorts of sex and nudity. We can like get as violent and graphic as we want. We are going, we can shock you and make you cringe and make you like put a big ass smile on your face all in the same episode and all with like, with a plot line and a narrative and like subtext and content that is really making you think and like, you know, is big, big, big picture stuff.
Ruby as a white woman,
right?
A black woman in a white woman's body operating in society was brilliant.
Yeah.
If I have to watch her shed one more time, I am going to vomit up everything inside of my body.
I loved it.
I can't do it anymore. Dude, I keep making the mistake of watching the show when I'm eating. And I'll be like literally fork in hand, like fucking chicken spaghetti on the way to my mouth. And I'll look up and she's like doing another transformation scene where she has to rip herself in half and like chunks of flesh are falling from her. And I'm just like, God damn it.
All of my favorite moments of this show through five have been when they lean into horror.
Definitely.
So
I agree.
That's why I liked that, because I was like, it reminded me of, you know, The Fly or something.
Yes,
you ever see that Jeff Goldblum
exactly,
movie?
That's exactly right.
Like,
yeah.
So I like it when they're kind of spin off and like do these little homages to kind of classic horror tropes, right?
Which they
and
do they, often
and they
now.
Do, and they do it in really, I mean, that was disgusting. It was awesome.
It was dope, yeah.
It was just really,
bad
really
timing
well done, and it was great.
Bad
it was
timing.
Crazy, gross, and awesome. And I just like
three times
she,
it's been
when
bad
they're
time.
At the when they're at the bar on the south side and she sheds outside and it gets real, real, you know, graphic with it.
Uh-huh.
I was just like, that was one of those moments that I'm talking about where I'm just like, I've got this weird cringe smile on my face because I'm like, oh, but tight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it
which
was,
is exactly the reaction that you want. Like they're crushing those scenes.
And then of course we got they gave us another sex scene between Atticus and
all
Letty.
Four of these. Give me as many of them
I'm
as
going
you would
to
like.
Go out on a limb here and say that both of them spend some time in the gym every once in a while. Just you
they
know,
both must work out.
They both must work out. Yes,
they both,
indeed.
They both must work out.
And then let's talk about the reveal. Did you catch it earlier in the episode when they kind of like made some allusions to it?
What was the reveal?
That William and Christina are one and the same.
Nope. I didn't.
I mean, you saw
when
it
did
the
they
end.
Make allusions to it earlier in the episode?
So it struck me. I was like, oh, when Ruby is back at the house, and Christina walks in, and she goes, "Oh, you're not William." She's expecting William.
And oh yeah.
And then I suddenly just went to myself, "Wait, have we ever seen them on screen at the same time?" Like I had this idea, they were playing with like the shedding and the body double thing, like somebody being inside somebody else. And I thought about it in that moment. I was like, could they be the same person?
But so is William even a person, or is it just Christina? And then she morphs into this male
into a male to be a man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Wow. That's fucking weird. When you look back at all the scenes we've seen with William now.
Yeah. Yes.
Love this. Love that as a wrinkle.
It's a big wrinkle. It's a good one. We had the guy being tortured in the sheriff's closet with his tongue cut out. What that was another gnarly ass scene.
What the fuck, man? Major like Pulp Fiction Gimp vibes in that scene too.
And then of course we had Montrose coming to terms with his sexuality.
Yes, and that again, was a very interesting aspect of this episode that they really delved
very,
into.
Eye-opening scenes,
indeed. Indeed. Very sexual. Like they did not hold back at all, that's been an interesting thing as we start to see more and more TV shows and movies delve into like homosexuality and alternate, you know, sexual lifestyles. They've all started out as like, well, we'll give you the 1967 version of what this would look like.
Yes.
Now we're starting to get more into like treating other like non-straight sexes.
Yep. Like
as
sex.
Literally, like just it's just sex.
Yes,
just sex. Just play it out the same way. It's just a little different than the man and the woman thing.
Absolutely,
and directors are starting to get more comfortable with it. It's becoming something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love that piece of it because it's part of the whole thing. It's like one of the reasons that people are uncomfortable with it is because it's something that they've never shown,
or they don't see enough
in mainstream media and TV and entertainment. So it's like. So it's jarring, but the more, because you're not used to seeing it, but the more you see it, the more
you understand
like you said, it. It's just, is just sex.
Yes.
This is
and sex the more you understand people. It and the less fearful of it and the less hate there is. Yep. And it's the reason it's so important to continue to obviously display those relationships in the same way that we do straight ones.
Yeah.
Which is, we're like literally this is one of the more accurate scenes we've seen. It's just the last few handful of years we've gotten to a place where Hollywood has, you know, finally had the balls, for lack of a better term, and
sure.
Probably the most inappropriate one considering the circumstances, to go there, to finally start giving us real gay relationships.
Yes.
Is what I mean.
And then I really just I dug the scene at the drag show, where Montrose kind of like lets himself go a little bit and dances with his partner, and then like who kind of like passes him off, and he kind of gets into the whole groove of things,
yeah,
and just is like able to let go and enjoy it. I thought that was a fun and good scene to kind of wrap up the episode with. I don't think that ends the episode, but it's towards the back.
Yeah. And it was very, very well done,
yep,
as the whole show has been. That's the one area that you can certainly not make any complaints, at least in my opinion, that from a cinematography and in terms of effects and blending high quality effects with very old school horror methods has been what has made this show still very watchable and something that I look forward to each week. I'm still not like gonna sit here and lie to you and pretend I'm way into the storyline, because I'm not. But in terms of the entertainment value and the visuals I'm getting week in and week out, I'm still here and I'm happy.
No,
I'm happy.
I'm with you. This is not gonna be like story-wise, plot-wise, it's definitely not my favorite show ever. There's something still sort of missing in the execution.
Now, I think
they've like,
started to get it together a little, though. The big reveal in this episode was like, that put a lot of the past stuff into a place where I started to care more.
Yeah. But this episode got back to like being really pretty to look at, visually stunning, a lot of like, you know, a lot of those really crazy moments where you're like, oh my God, what are they doing?
A lot of really deep, meaningful shit too.
Yeah. So it was, it had all of those pieces. And like you said, it's like, let's hope that they can kind of close out the back half with organizing this plot in a meaningful way that kind of narratively does something a little bit, you know, just a little bit more, not sensical, because we're dealing with all sorts of magic here, but
yeah,
that just kind of puts it back on the horse in a little bit better of a way.
I'm with you. The ones that have been the best for me are when they're able to tie real world social circumstances into the stuff more strongly. Yeah. And that was what was lacking in episode 4 for me. It's what came back in episode 5 in more than one way, because we tackled both race and sexuality, and race and sexuality tied together all in one episode, along with moving the other pieces of the story. And that's when this show is humming. So hopefully that's what they're able to continue out through the rest of the season. And those are all my points for Lovecraft Country season 1, episode 5.
Indeed.
Indeed. And that will do it for today's episode of OCC. Huge thanks to our sponsors for today's show. We got Lisa.com/dragon. Go get yourself a Lisa. And FelixGrayGlasses.com/OCC. Appreciate Felix Gray and Lisa for supporting the podcast. If for some reason you don't need some of the greatest products known to man created by our sponsors, then you can support the show directly in exchange for ad-free premium an ad-free premium episode of this show every week if you'd like by joining the Mollusk Militia on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. We also have a $5 minimum pledge tier, the Crustacean Nation, that'll get you 3 additional episodes of this show ad-free every month exclusively on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, as well as a few other new tiers that'll get you things like, we have one called the Line Tappers or whatever, that gets you access to the Mollusk Militia.
Excuse me, don't salt the wire tappers.
Sorry,
like that.
Wire tappers, not line tappers. And you get access to the Mollusk Militia exclusive hotline episode without actually being able to call in if you still want to listen. One of our favorite episodes to do every month on Patreon. And we have Movie Club for exclusive people who exclusively want to enjoy our Movie Club movie episode every single month. This month we did Tenet, excuse me, for the month of September, available now already on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Barrett and I's review of Tenet, which we saw in theaters, and it was awesome. As I said earlier on in the episode, the episode we did this week on Patreon is What's to Come in 2020. We cover all the different movies and TV shows that we're excited to see, from Dune, Devil All the Time, No Time to Die, Fargo, The Mandalorian, Walking Dead, all types of stuff. And as Barrett said, we debuted Such Bits and Tid with Ross as we are still dealing with the inverse time situation as a result of having watched Tenet. So patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Do it. Support OCC. Clam fam for life. Get yourself more episodes every week if you want. Follow us on social media for updates on the best in TV and film content you can find on the whole of the internet. At Oysters Clams Cockles on Instagram, at Clams and Cockles on Twitter, and you can find us on Facebook.com/OystersClamsCockles. My name is Ross Bolin, and you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at WRBOLEN, at WRBolin, and listen to the Ross Bolin podcast wherever you listen to Oysters Clams and Cockles, also brought to you by Bolin Media. It's my comedy and humor show with a focus on mental health, current events, sports, music, animals, and more. The Ross Bolin podcast, wherever you listen to OCC. Mr. Dudley, where can we follow you on social media and hear more of your voice?
Yeah, you can follow me Instagram and Twitter at Barrett Dudley, and then check out the Club Cool podcast. We have an episode releasing later this afternoon where, for the first time ever, somebody is going to eat a Cactus Jack McDonald's meal on the air of a podcast.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Happening. It's a big deal. It's big news. A lot of people are talking about it.
Is there a review?
There will be a review. I will also record myself going to McDonald's and saying, Cactus Jack sent me, it's lit, and then pressing play on sicko mode so that I can sicko mode on the McDonald's Cactus Jack meal and get my Sprite on.
I'm disgusted. But also,
and yeah, I hope they're not out of the Cactus Jack meals.
Why? Oh, because this is what you're going to be going to try to do.
Yeah. I got to go get the Cactus Jack meal later today.
Oh, got you.
And then bring it to the studio where we can
record.
Record, yeah.
While eating Cactus Jack. Oh, okay.
Meals.
Best of luck to you, sir.
Not eating Cactus Jack, but eating the Cactus Jack meal. It's the Travis Scott meal. It's $6.
I hope the McDonald's person doesn't just slap the fuck out of you, too. You know? But yeah, listen to Club Cool wherever you listen to OCC.
Cactus Jack, send me.
Follow Barrett everywhere at Barrett Dudley. Follow me at WR Bolin. Y'all have a great weekend. So again, sorry for the weird scheduling switcheroo this week where Patreon came before the ad base, but that's the way the cookie crumbled. And we'll be back next week with more coverage of The Boys and Lovecraft Country and perhaps Yellowstone. Maybe the next week, we'll see. Until next time, adios muchachos.